From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
The Mission.
Excelsior.
Redwood City.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Vallejo.
I'm from Redwood City, so I guess that's in the peninsula.
Coming up, we're hopping around the Bay asking people how they'll vote.
I think that all elections are a bunch of poo. I think that our votes really don't count, not with electoral colleges and everything.
Then we hear about an idea to restore Hetch Hetchy and the opposition to it.
First of all, it would put San Francisco on a two-step plan to drain Hetch Hetchy Reservoir, which has enormous negative consequences.
And we explore why some juveniles end up with such long prison sentences.
If you injure someone, you add an extra 10 years. If it's serious injury, you add another 15 years.
That's all today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, we're going all around the Bay to see what you, the voters, are talking about this election season. Let's start in Napa City, where we ask people about the main issue on their minds.
Well, of course, with everybody, it's the economy. I see things gradually happening and it for the better, but, you know, I also see the Republicans stopping President Obama doing what he wants to do, so I think it could be a lot better, but, maybe this next time.
Whether or not you're for Obamacare or some other plan, something's got to be done. It's not working the way it is. So I think that that's on the minds of many. I just think it's shame on us if we can't take care of our own.
I don't really feel like us as American people have a voice anymore, and I feel it's only before time before the American people just revolt, overthrow the government. I'm serious. Look at it. It's only a matter of time. You see what's happening to Egypt, all over the world, you know?
Those are the voices of Napa City residents Johnny Kozad, Darcy Tunt, and Matthew Fortezo, as brought to us by KALW's Julie Kane. We'd like to know where you're from and what's on your mind as the elections roll around. Call our feedback line at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And leave us a message. You might hear yourself on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We'll join another reporter later in the show to get more voter reactions. But for now, let's delve into one of the propositions on the San Francisco ballot, Proposition F, which has to do with the restoration of the Hetch Hetchy Valley. Currently, it's underwater, water that travels by gravity 160 miles to come right out of our taps here in San Francisco. 85% of the city's water comes from the reservoir, but it wasn't always this simple. Before the Hetch Hetchy Valley was flooded or the O'Shaughnessy Dam was built, environmentalists led by John Muir put up a big fight to keep it protected. Here's an excerpt from an article written by John Muir describing the Hetch Hetchy Valley.
It is a wonderfully exact counterpart of the Great Yosemite, not only in its crystal river and sublime rocks and waterfalls, but in the gardens, groves, and meadows of its flower park-like floor. The walls of both are of gray granite, rise abruptly out of the flowery grass, and groves are sculptured in the same style, and in both, every rock is a glacial monument.
Mike Marshall is the executive director of Restore Hetch Hetchy, an environmental group that supports Prop F in wanting to drain the reservoir and return the valley to its natural state. The proposition would require the city of San Francisco to put together a plan that eventually demolishes the O'Shaughnessy Dam. Then in 4 years, a separate ballot initiative would authorize the actual demolition. Marshall sat down with KALW's Martina Castro, who asked him to go back and describe the time when building the reservoir was considered a radical idea and hotly debated in the early 1900s.
The argument over whether Hetch Hetchy should be dammed and flooded
was the first national environmental debate in the country, really. The national parks were first created when Yosemite was created as a national park in 1890, but they didn't have any money. They didn't have any definition. There were sheep herders there and loggers and all sort of stuff going on. And John Muir and others really fought to create some structure to it, but the battle to try and keep Hetch Hetchy from being destroyed was the defining moment in the National Park Service. Even though they lost the battle to protect Hetch Hetchy, the Park Service was created out of it. The Organic Act was passed. You will not find another national park with a reservoir and dam in the middle of it because of the fight to keep Hetch Hetchy from happening. So it was, and you know, the U.S. Senate debated it for a week. Wouldn't it be great if the U.S. Senate would debate things for a week today? It was a huge national debate that was lost, but in 1913. It then took about 20 years to construct the Hetch Hetchy system. They clear-cut the valley floor. They built a railroad to go into Hetch Hetchy Valley in order to bring in all the supplies to build the dam and to take the timber out. Unfortunately, what they didn't do is the corridor, the Tuolumne River corridor, was the primary human corridor for thousands of years. Native Americans that were going from the east side of the Sierras to the west side of the Sierras followed along the Tuolumne River. As a result, Hetch Hetchy Valley was a very spiritual place, and it was home to burial grounds for a number of different Native American tribes. There was no effort whatsoever made to remove those remains or to protect those remains or those cultural sites. And today, it is expected that in the sediment behind the dam, which most dams have some sediment, very little at Hetch Hetchy because it's a big granite bowl, but that there's generations upon generations of Native Americans interred at the bottom of the reservoir. The dam was constructed, and they finally started delivering water to San Francisco in 1930. And as a result, if you look at sort of where San Francisco got its water before that versus all of a sudden there was this water from the High Sierra, we abandoned all local groundwater use. We used to recycle water back then. San Francisco no longer recycles any water. Whereas today, Orange County, 20% of the water you get out of the tap is recycled. San Francisco, as a result of having this federally subsidized water from the High Sierra, didn't develop any sustainable water management practices. And we're going to pay for that as climate change becomes a much bigger issue.
So the biggest question on people's minds is, where will San Francisco get its water? And also, there's a lot of electric power coming out of maybe not the dam itself, but hydroelectric stations. And so power and water are in people's minds when they think of getting rid of the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. What do you say to that?
So the first question is, where will we get our water? And my response to that is the exact same place. Hetch Hetchy is not the source of our water. The Tuolumne River, which flows through Hetch Hetchy Valley, is the source of our water. San Francisco's water rights are tied to the Tuolumne River, not to Hetch Hetchy Valley. So all we're saying is, let's not store our water in a national park. Let's continue to use Tuolumne River water, although let's reduce the use of it. Let's get better. Let's get more modern in terms of how we manage our water resources. But we will still be able to get the most of our water from the Tuolumne River. We just need to store it elsewhere, outside of the park. In terms of the power issue, the system itself delivers 20% of San Francisco's power, but understand that's a really small fraction of the total power produced in California. San Francisco sells surplus power to Turlock and Modesto. That's the power that will be lost. And that's not a bad thing because they currently use that power to subsidize water to agribusiness, which is not environmentally friendly either. So there will be a 20% loss of power produced, but not in any loss of power delivered to San Francisco. It's loss of power being sold to the big farms in the Central Valley.
I'm talking to Mike Marshall, Executive Director of Restore Hetch Hetchy. So on your website, I was looking it over, and you do have a plan.
It's really not our plan per se, but the state of California has looked at this issue. The National Park System has looked at this. The Federal Bureau of Reclamation, the University of California, Davis, the Environmental Defense Fund, one of the preeminent environmental organizations in the country. They've all studied the issue and have concluded San Francisco will not be harmed by moving the reservoir out of the national park.
So what will it look like? Take me step by step.
Right.
What would it look like to actually do something like this?
There are several plans. There's one by the University of Wisconsin on our website that suggests an adaptive restoration strategy. So that's where you control the draining of the reservoir, not just because you can't dump it all at once, but So you can control the non-native species from coming in, and you can facilitate the reintroduction of plant life systematically as the water comes down to the valley floor. The river itself will reclaim itself along its regular contours pretty quickly. And at which point, 18 months later, depending on the season that, that it finally happens, you'll start to see green meadows return to the valley floor. Within 5 to 10 years, you'll start to see saplings coming up. Now, obviously, if we do an adaptive restoration strategy, that's just on its own, Mother Nature taking its course. If we work to facilitate it and come in and have students and professors and restoration scientists, facilitating the process, you'll see within 10 to 15 years, you can camp there. The opportunity, the collateral impact of bringing this valley in Yosemite National Park, this iconic place that people from around the world travel to, it will have a huge collateral impact on other environmental restoration projects that are not as visible as the restoration of Hetch Hetchy will.
Why are people against this idea?
Well, I think our recent polling would indicate that the average person in San Francisco mistakenly believes their water comes from Hetch Hetchy and 80% of them can't identify the Tuolumne River as the source of their water. And then it's the status quo. And the bureaucracies are designed to deliver and to protect the status quo. And I would argue that the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission is a great set of folks over there, but on a collective level, it's not their job necessarily to have the vision for the future. It's their job to deliver water and power to you and me today as cheaply and as efficiently as possible. And then if you look at a spreadsheet, environmental change requires resources and a reallocation of resources. And so if you're just looking at a cost-benefit analysis on a month-by-month basis, making investments in environmental change, environmental improvements, are never going to cost out on the bottom line. We have a lot of decisions we have to make, and you could argue that they're hard decisions relative to the impacts that climate change are going to have on us. And we need public policy that addresses that, and we need to change our personal behavior. And this is a great confluence of it. It's about water. It's not just about Yosemite, or it's not just about Hetch Hetchy Valley. It's about how you and I use our water in the morning and how we receive our water and what kind of water that is. And so I think, there are so many collateral benefits to provoking this conversation that it's as much about the conversation as it is about the outcome. But don't get me wrong, we're going to win.
That was Mike Marshall, who's the executive director of Restore Hetch Hetchy. And you're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now let's hear the other side of that debate. KALW's Ben Trefney talked with P.J. Johnston, the spokesman for the No on F campaign, and asked him what would happen if Prop F passes.
So Prop F is problematic for a number of reasons. First of all, it would put San Francisco on a two-step plan to drain Hetch Hetchy Reservoir, which has enormous negative consequences for the city, but also for the entire region. And we can talk about those consequences in a few minutes. But proponents will tell you, oh, don't worry, it's just about developing a plan. It doesn't commit us to anything. Well, that's not true. It commits the city to spending at least $8 million to develop a plan to drain Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. And then regardless of how far we get on that plan, what kind of things we find in studying for that plan, and whether or not $8 million, frankly, is sufficient to conduct such an enormous endeavor. Regardless of any of that, Proposition F says that we will come back to voters in 2016 and actually vote on draining Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. This idea, draining Hetch Hetchy Reservoir, has been studied at least 7 times in the past 30 years. And every time it's come back and said, well, you could do it, but the costs in real dollars and the elimination of safe, reliable drinking water and clean hydroelectric power are so enormous that, frankly, the city would be crazy to do it.
Now, Mr. Marshall on Restore Hetch Hetchy says that this would not affect the water supply. It would just change the way the water is coming in. And it would also not affect San Francisco as far as the distribution of power, that this is all excess power that's going off to the Central Valley anyway.
Well, I'll take the second one first, because it's ludicrous that he would suggest that it would not affect our hydroelectric power. He knows, and it's well established, that Hetch Hetchy reservoir is the start, the beginning of our system, which delivers clean water through gravity all the way to San Francisco. It also, that gravity-driven system, generates clean, carbon-free hydroelectric power. Now, I don't know where he gets his figures that we don't actually need that power and we just sell it off, but that's patently untrue. The fact is that hydroelectric power powers every muni bus in San Francisco. It's worth noting that San Francisco has the largest number of electric trolley buses in the nation. It powers our streetlights, it powers our hospitals, it powers our schools. That power is enormously important to the city of San Francisco. And what we'd need to do to replace that, should we lose it, would be go out on the open market, spend more than $40 million to buy dirty power on the open market provided by existing power suppliers. Now, possibly there's some clean energy out there, surplus that we just don't know about, vast fields of solar panels or wind. But to date, no one's got access to that power right now. What we do know is it would cost in today's dollars about $40 million to replace it, and there'd be no guarantee it would be clean power. So that's just a preposterous notion. Now, the water, that's it's another big whopper that Mr. Marshall likes to throw around, and that is, hey, you eliminate the largest single water storage supply in the state of California, which is the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. 85% of our water, not just San Francisco's, but 30 cities on the peninsula that rely on this water, won't affect anybody. That you'll just tap the water downstream or do something else to acquire that water from the Tuolumne River.
I mean, it makes logical sense.
It may make logical sense, except that there's no place where that water is currently being stored. There's no place to gather it. The reason it's at the top of the water chain, so to speak, the chain of reservoirs, is because it's the biggest and it's at the source, which is in the Sierra Nevadas. It's where all the water begins. We do not have any viable place to store that water. Now, Mr. Marshall likes to suggest that we'll use New Don Pedro Dam, but we don't own New Don Pedro Dam.
Where is New Don Pedro
Dam? New Don Pedro Dam is in the Central Valley, and it's owned by the Modesto and Turlock Irrigation Districts. They own the dam. They have water rights to the dam. We do not. So if we were to say, hey, we're no longer rely on our water supply, which is Hetch Hetchy Reservoir, we're going to expand New Don Pedro Dam, we don't have the ability to do that because we don't own it. And Modesto and Turlock have said we absolutely have no intention of expanding our reservoir. And even if we did, we would not supply the water to you. So that's a canard.
So what do you think of the idea to restore the Hetch Hetchy? Would you vote in favor or against Prop F? Let us know on our Facebook page. It's KALW News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now let's go back out and check in with our roving reporters who are finding out what's on voters' minds this election year. We went to downtown San Francisco and brought back these perspectives.
Oh, I think it's a joke like every year. It's, you know, you get to vote for one of the people in the Demo Republican Party, either the red or the blue version, and they're the same. So there's really no point in voting whatsoever.
Well, I'm really kind of undecided. I don't think anyone is really talking about anything different or new. They are totally leaving out the women, the poor, and the schools.
I appreciate Obama's social stance on social policies, but that's the only thing that I really feel like is at stake, because I feel like whoever gets elected, the financial situation is probably just going to remain the same. I don't think that they're really. The politicians are really in control of that so much as the banks are in the country.
I think that all elections are a bunch of poo. I think that, honestly, they vote in office who they want to be in office. I think that our votes really don't count, not with electoral colleges and everything.
Hopefully Obama will get a second term. But on the other hand, I feel that we desperately need, one, to get money out of politics, and also we need a viable third party.
those are the voices of San Francisco residents Grim Lithsaw, Joy Pulsifer, Rob Wadley, James Smith, and Bruce Bowman, as brought to us by KALW's RJ Sloan. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. As adult voters express their concerns, the youth have their own. For juveniles in California being sentenced for crimes, things just got a little more complicated. Proposition 21 requires mandatory minimums for juveniles that often translate into long sentences. In California alone, there are hundreds of inmates serving juvenile sentences totaling between 50 and 200 years. Advocates argue that these sentences are the equivalent of life without parole. This summer, the state Supreme Court agreed and ruled that unusually long sentences for juveniles are unconstitutional. So, what does this mean for juveniles being sentenced today and those sentenced before them? Youth Radio's Sarah Quevedo tries to make sense of how these extraordinarily long sentences happen in the first place and what this means for the future of California's approach to juvenile justice.
Rodrigo Caballero was no angel. When he was 16 years old, he was convicted of 3 counts of attempted murder for shooting at rival gang members in his hometown of Palmdale, California. Caballero's case attracted a lot of attention, but not because of what he did. It had more to do with his sentence, 110 years in prison with no chance of parole.
Well, California has very tough sentencing laws.
That's David Dirchfort. He's Caballero's lawyer. He says Caballero's long sentence was a product of something called enhancements. Those are special circumstances that automatically tack on years to a juvenile sentence. And they add up quick.
For example, if you use a gun, you add an extra 10 years. If you injure someone, you add an extra 10 years. If it's serious injury, you add another 15 years.
Times each victim. So going back to Caballero's case, where he shot at 3 people and injured 1, he received 35 plus 35 plus 40 years in prison.
Hence, he got a sentence of 110 years minimum to a maximum of life.
It's a horrendous penalty.
That's Dan McAleer. He's the executive director of the Center for Juvenile and Criminal Justice. He says that sentencing juveniles to life in prison or its equivalent doesn't reflect teens' ability to reform.
I'm 56 now. I don't remember what I did 30 years ago. And probably some things I'd like to forget.
The idea that kids can change isn't new. The juvenile justice system was founded on that idea way back in the day. But in the late 1980s, rising rates of gang violence caused many states to toughen up on youth crime.
Virtually every state in the country, including the District of Columbia, passed laws that made it easier to transfer more kids to the adult court and also increase length of sentences that kids would serve in correctional facilities.
Including California. But now the state is shifting philosophies again, re-embracing reform over punishment. This summer, for example, the state Supreme Court ruled in favor of Caballero, calling long juvenile sentences like his unconstitutional. And more recently, Governor Jerry Brown signed SB 9, which gives kids with life sentences the chance to appeal after 15 years. But not everyone thinks it's a good idea to give young offenders a second chance.
They're shooting people, they're killing people, they're robbing. They're doing the most serious of crimes, and, you know, they're being dealt with accordingly.
That's Robert Sherwood. He was the prosecutor in Caballero's case. His views aren't reflected in the new legislation, but chances are inmates appealing their sentences will have to face someone like him, maybe even behind the bench. Once again, Dan McAleer.
How the individual judges in particular counties, again, will respond depends on the pressure they face. It depends on, are they facing re-election that year? How much blowback do they get from prosecutors? Many of them are ex-prosecutors themselves. The only thing I can predict with certainty is that you'll have huge variations.
In other words, there's no guarantee inmates convicted as juveniles will be released. And given that some counties have more conservative judges than others, where you're tried might end up being more important than what you did. For Cross Currents, I'm Sarah Quevedo.
That story was produced by our partners at Youth Radio and their Juvenile Justice Desk. You're listening listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and now it's time to check in with our reporters one last time to see what's going on people's minds this election season. This time, we go to Oakland and Berkeley.
There's been some things that have disappointed me about Obama, of course. I think of him as sort of a moderate Republican in a lot of ways, but compared to an extreme conservative, he looks, you know, pretty appealing, and I was impressed with what he was able to do with healthcare, getting that passed. That was quite an accomplishment. So,
you know, for me, there's two really important issues in the United States right now. One is energy, and I think having an all-of-the-above energy policy like Mitt Romney does is a really good idea for our country. And second, I think small business. I'm a small business owner. I think Mitt Romney has a good understanding and support of small business, and anything we can do to let entrepreneurs, small business people, inventors, succeed and give them the tools and then take away some of the barriers, I think we'll be better off as a country.
I don't feel like I really have a choice. I'm pretty sure that if Romney got elected, a lot of bad things would happen to the things that I care about. You know, it's sort of interesting to see what he has to say, but there's no way I would vote for him at all, so Obama is the only option.
For my own personal politics, the Democratic Party is not far enough to the left on most issues in any case, and so it does seem that two very circumscribed choices, Obama's by far the better.
Those are the voices of Berkeley and Oakland residents Bob Ferris, Christopher Rufo, Tess Thorman, and Todd Carmody, brought to us by KALW's Alyssa Kapnick. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Maya DePaola Hanika, Chris Hoff, Alyssa Kapnick, RTM's Konahoffs, Ashley Ann Craigbaum, Erica Mu, Stephen Short, Antoinette Sue, Anna Sterling, and RJ Sloan. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.